The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. Thursday, January 16th, 2020. The great political theorist Leo Strauss once wrote, "Only a great fool would call the new political science diabolic. It has no attributes to fallen angels. It's not even Machiavellian, for Machiavelli's teaching was graceful, subtle, and colorful. Nor is it Neronian. Nevertheless, one may say of it that it fiddles while Rome burns. It is excused by two facts. It does not know that it fiddles, and it does not know that Rome burns." Close quote. How much more so is this true of the modern day, today's Democratic Party? I do think some of them know they are fiddling. I do not think they understand what it means for Rome or the United States to be burning. This is an old debate here. Does the left believe what it says, and does their idea of transforming America to them mean improving America or destroying it? We think they are about iconoclasm, destruction. They think their transformation is for some greater good. We can revisit that if you want. I think some of them know well what they are doing and are knaves, trying to destroy great things for the purpose of either bad things or power. For different reasons, I'd put Ilhan Omar and Nancy Pelosi in those two categories, respectively. Others are just fools or idiots who don't know much. I'd put Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in that camp. As for the Senate, people like Chuck Schumer and Pat Leahy, they aren't knaves. But I do get why they all, with their compliant media, why they're all making such a meal of the impeachment scenes, especially yesterday and today. If you make something look majestic, it must be majestic. But let's recall for a day or two, at least until the Senate trial starts next week, when we'll all be reminded again how mundane and ho-hum all of this is. Let's remind ourselves what all this pomp and circumstance is about. As I said yesterday, it's all about a legal delay of aid to Ukraine that was delivered within the time specified it had to be delivered by, with no commission of any crime whatsoever, either charged or alleged, based on a phone call with the president of Ukraine, who himself says he never felt pressure from the United States, over a sum of $390 million, which is about 0.57% of the budget of the U.S. Department of Education, 1.2% of Ukraine's total budget, or 0.0088% of the U.S. budget. Again, sorry, you don't impeach a president over that. As I said, lex non cura de minimis, the law doesn't bother with trifles, but here there isn't even a lex, a law. We'll be reminded of all of that next week when we get to see Jerry Nadler and Adam Schiff confront the Senate with their charges, and when we see the press conferences Chuck Schumer and my guest, Cory Booker, try to use to muster an indignation the American people simply cannot muster over all of this, because all of this is really very, very little. Compared to what other presidents have done? Just a briefest of sketches using David Rivkin's history. Thomas Jefferson impounded funds appropriated for gunboat purchases. Dwight Eisenhower impounded funds for anti-ballistic missile production. John F. Kennedy impounded money for the B-70 bomber. And Richard Nixon impounded billions for highways and urban programs. Congress attempted to curtail this power with the Impoundment Control Act of 1974, but it authorizes the president to defer spending until the expiration of the fiscal year or until budget authority lapses, neither of which have occurred or had occurred in the Ukraine case. Presidents often delay or refuse funding foreign aid as diplomatic leverage, even when Congress has authorized the funds. Dispersing foreign aid and withholding it has historically been one of the president's most potent foreign policy tools, and Congress cannot impair it. Lyndon Johnson used the promise of financial aid to strong-arm the Philippines, Thailand, and South Korea to send troops to Vietnam. The General Accounting Office concluded that this constituted quid pro quo assistance. In 2013, Barack Obama, in a phone call with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, said he would slash hundreds of millions of dollars in military and economic assistance until Cairo cooperated with U.S. counterterrorism goals. The Obama administration also withheld millions in foreign aid and imposed visa restrictions on African countries, including Uganda and Nigeria, till they started to protect gay rights. That all said, you may ask, then why now? Why Trump? It's simple, really. First, you saw the debate Tuesday night among the Democrats. You think any of those characters can go toe-to-toe with Trump? With his record? A booming economy, a new trade deal everyone is saluting, curbing China a little bit, taking two major terrorists off the face of this earth, all the while keeping us safe and not bringing about, as the Want America to Fail for Being America crowd promised these things would cause, World War III? Or economic collapse and recession they predicted, or did they want that too? Why Trump? Because the Democrats know what so many of his supporters know. It's what Abraham Lincoln knew about Ulysses S. Grant. It's a great story. Do you know it? There was, shall we say, a never-granter in Pennsylvania named Alexander McClure. He was a member of the Pennsylvania legislature and a famous Republican newspaper editor. He didn't like or trust Ulysses S. Grant early on. After Grant's win at the Battle of Shiloh in 1862, Grant was the head of the Army of the Tennessee at the time, McClure paid old Abe a visit in the White House. McClure wrote this of his visit, quote, "I appealed to Lincoln for his own sake to remove Grant at once, and in giving my reasons for it, I simply voiced the admittedly overwhelming protest from the loyal people of the land against Grant's continuance in command. I could form no judgment during the conversation as to what effect my arguments had on him beyond the fact that he was greatly distressed at this new complication. When I had said everything that could be said from my standpoint, we lapsed into silence. Lincoln remained silent for what seemed like a very long time. He then gathered himself up in his chair and said in a tone of earnestness I'll never forget, he said, I can't spare this man. He fights." You can see any given never-Trumper in McClure, can't you? And yet McClure was schoolable. But what Lincoln said of Grant is what we know and the Democrats know of Trump, isn't it? He fights. He fights the media on their terms, he fights the Democrats on theirs, and that's what they hate, as any ne'er-do-well hates having a mirror held up to themselves. That explains this vengeance to get him. He exposes their lies, he shows conservatism as common sense, and he unveils political correctness as so much nonsense as to be, well, nonsensical. Meanwhile, the Democrats, what, want to increase taxes, get rid of energy independence? Leave terrorists on the battlefield and put the IRS back in charge, or perhaps some bigger or worse agency or new department in charge of your health care? Break it down. What about that do they not stand for? As they teeter on the verge, and I think we'll go over the verge, of nominating an out-and-out self-described socialist, they stand for all that and worse. To do what? Upend all this. And I quote an ASU student who wrote this today, which gives me hope for our students. She wrote, "In 2019, many individuals and corporations practiced heroic acts of charity. The 100 largest charities in the United States raised more than $51 billion in donations, a 5% increase from the year prior. Overall, Americans gave a total of $428 billion to charity in 2018. The labor force participation rate in the U.S. reached an all-time high by the end of 2019. This should give us further hope for a robust economy and a decrease in poverty moving forward. 2019 was also a fantastic year for religious freedom. A long list of court cases ruled in favor of professionals of faith and protected their right to adhere to their beliefs. This is something to be celebrated because freedom for one person to live peaceably according to their beliefs, it's freedom for all of us to do the same. That freedom is a hallmark of what it means to be an American, enshrined in the First Amendment, if not in our natural law. And by the way, as you've heard me before, the wrath against Republicans, and it isn't just Trump. If you don't believe me, look at the reaction Ellen DeGeneres received for meeting with ex-President George W. Bush. It was actually worse than the reaction of Vince Vaughn received for meeting with Donald Trump. Theirs is a wrath against all Republicans. It's just that Trump is there right now. What a base is it about? Just what that ASU student said at the end there. The courts. It's about the courts, where all social and religious policy is now affirmed and denied, where the elites used to be in charge against the common sense of the people. Trump is changing that with a gusto unimagined by even some of his most ardent supporters in 2016. And that, end of day, that is what the left and liberals hate. Us taking one institution away from elite, pseudo-sophisticated, anti-common sense, anti-democratic social and political progressives. I say thank God. I forgot how good ABBA was. Is that the only ABBA song we have? Let's throw in some more ABBA. Just go to the greatest hits. Or you know what? Why don't you and I visit on the break? Are you okay with ABBA, Bill? You're okay with this. You often are disgruntled with my music choices. But who doesn't like ABBA? Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. 602-508-0960. Am I saying it right? Is it ABBA or ABBA? You've heard it both ways, okay? You know who's had things both ways? Joe Scarborough. Joe Scarborough's done things both ways. Used to be a big Trump promoter. Then he and his, is it a fiance or wife now? I'm not sure. But anyway, his partner, Mika Brzezinski, they've just been on a 3-year tear against him after having puffed him up quite a bit. This morning, Joe just went off. And it's not like I care that much what Joe Scarborough thinks. But if he's going to wax philosophical, I think he does owe some kind of philosophical explanation for his turn in philosophy, his change in view. He was part of the original 1994 Gingrich class, the series of congressmen that helped take over the House of Representatives for the Republican Party. And he was one of the most vocal. He was one of the lightning rods for that class. Very conservative. He had made his bones in Florida as an attorney, ardent attorney on behalf of the pro-life movement. And he was quite something. And something changed. He retired from Congress. And then he got his job on MSNBC, where he was semi-conservative, I suppose. And now just isn't. But now he's entering an entirely different, odd luxury realm. Listen to what he said this morning.
We don't know how this ends in the Senate. These shameless Trumpsters will remain shameless Trumpsters. But we do know how the story ends. We do know how history writes this. We know that everyone who defends Donald Trump right now will be exposed. We know Mike Pence will be exposed for what he is. We know that Barr will be exposed for what he is. We know that all of these characters, Rudy Giuliani, will be exposed for what he is. The history, it will be bleak. And their families, their children, their grandchildren, everyone who has their last name will carry that around with them if they decide to continue lying for a failed reality TV host who will show them no loyalty.
Excuse me, that's fine. First of all, failed reality TV host. Well, it was that network, Joe's network, NBC, that kept him on for so many years. Was it a failed reality TV show? I thought it was pretty successful, wasn't it? Even if it wasn't. How is he a failed host? He transformed it and other things into the presidency of the United States. It's just wrong, factually. History, it will be bleak, and their families, their children, their grandchildren, everyone who has their last name will carry that around with them. What is he, some kind of old prophet, Old Testament prophet? We're going to carry the sins of our fathers around with us, the iniquities of our fathers around with us for supporting Donald Trump. Supporting Donald Trump, he's making it sound like we're supporting some kind of atavistic racist or segregationist or something. It's as if David Duke were running for president and a bunch of people were lining up, or Louis Farrakhan lining up to support and defend Louis Farrakhan or David Duke. I'm sorry. Is Joe Scarborough seriously indicting over 63 million Americans, probably more now? Again, I would propose this to you. I'd be curious if you have a different take on this. I think I'm right about this, although polling is not great. Not great in the sense of not accurate on this point. Not positive or negative, just it doesn't capture the point I'm trying to ask you that I think I'm right about. Does Donald Trump have more supporters today than he did in November of 2016, or fewer? I think the answer is more. I think it has to be more. First of all, anecdotally, I don't know a single Republican who voted for him, or a single, let me put it this way, I don't know a single person who voted for him, Republican, independent, purple, Democrat, whatever, that regrets it. Indeed, I know Republicans and others who voted for him somewhat holding their nose, as the expression goes, who now say they are pleasantly surprised by his presidential tenure. So I think those who voted for him have grown in their support. The question is, has he picked up more supporters along the way or more detractors along the way? My sense is more. My sense is more. So is Joe Scarborough seriously, with the fawning eyes of Minka Brzezinski, his co-host and partner in life, looking on and nodding, is he seriously indicting all these people as if they're supporting some kind of what? I don't know, troglodytic monster? We know how this story ends. I don't know how this story ends. So far, the ribbon of history since January of 2017 has unfolded better for America than it was before January of 2017. So far, we're closer and closer to the pot of the gold at the end of the rainbow, are we not? So far, we're doing better under Donald Trump than we were before Donald Trump. So I don't know what he's talking about when he says we do know how this story ends. We do know how history writes this. And we know that everyone who defends Donald Trump right now will be exposed. History, it will be bleak. What does he know that I don't know? What does he know that almost every economist doesn't know? What does he know that Jamie Dimon doesn't know? What does he know that MasterCard doesn't know, or Henry Kissinger doesn't know? What does he know, Joe Scarborough at MSNBC, that millions and millions and millions of Americans know? Don't know, I suppose. And to say that this is just such an odd thing, their family, their children, their grandchildren, everyone who has their last name will be punished. As if we're kind of some kind of racial or ethnic minority who pass on our genes and they get to tell you who's evil and who's good based on birthright. You know, it would be easy for me to say I think Joe Scarborough's lost his mind. These people haven't lost their mind. I can't say they're insane. I can't say they're crazy. I think they honestly are doing everything they can out of frustration from the inability to make a coherent argument. It's like what Nancy Pelosi said about time yesterday. I think that's worth revisiting too. I'm Seth, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Oh, there's another ABBA. So we do have more than one. That's good. Welcome back to the Seth Liebshins Seth Leibson Show. You'd think I could say my name. 602-508-0960. So who's Joe Scarborough's speechwriter? He's trying to wax philosophical about the iniquities of the Trump supporters being handed down on their children and their children's children. Just so, so very odd. It reminds me a little bit, as I said, I think they're just trying to summon as much moral opprobrium on Trump that they can with just plumbing of the depths of their thesaurus as deeply as they can, because they don't have an argument. I just don't know what the arguments are. I don't. I really don't. And they don't make the argument. They don't make an argument. They sit there and they scowl and they use all this highly blandished language. Like Nancy Pelosi yesterday, talking about waxing philosophical about time, and it just didn't work. Do you have that still handy? Let's listen to her.
And as you know, I reference temporal markers that our founders and our poets and others have used over time to place us in time, to emphasize the importance of time, because everything is about time, how we use it, mark it. And today is an important day, because today is the day that we name the managers, we go to the floor to pass the resolution to transmit the articles of impeachment to the Senate, and later in the day when we have our engrossment.
She's out of breath, by the way, isn't she? Listen to this.
Those articles of impeachment to the United States Senate.
Here we go.
As I've said, it's always been our founders, when they started, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary, when Abraham Lincoln 47 years ago, Thomas Paine, now are these are the times that try men's souls, the times have found us. Again and again, even our poets.
Our poets.
Longfellow. Remember, listen, my children, and you will hear the midnight ride of Paul Revere on the 18th of April in 75. Hardly a man is now alive that remembers that famous day and year. It's always about marking history using time. On December 18th,
House of Representatives. Just very, very, very odd. She's trying to, I don't know what, trying to sound like some old important historian. Some old important historian who's marking something supremely monumental here. By the way, I'm glad to see she didn't get the memo from the New York Times that when in the course of human events wasn't the beginning of our country, but 1619 was. Did she not get that memo? The New York Times changed that, Nancy. It's not what Thomas Jefferson and our founders thought. It's the New York Times telling us 1619. I have more on that 1619 fraud as well. I want to do that in a few moments. Really fascinating candidate running against Ilhan Omar in Minnesota. A really fascinating candidate that I'm glad to see, because I don't know if the law's going to catch Ilhan Omar or if she's just going to continue on and on and on. But she is probably the most menacing, to me at least, the most menacing of the members of Congress, Republican, Democrat, Independent. I think the lies are incredible. I think the media deference to her is incredible. I think it's unheard of. I think if she were not a racial minority, she would not be getting the benefit of the media giving her a pass. I think they're afraid to be labeled in any sense Islamophobic. But now she's got a candidate against her, an Arab woman, Arab American woman, Muslim, woman who comes from Iraq, and she's running against Ilhan Omar. She just unveiled her first ad today. Do you have the audio of this ad, Bill, handy?
I've come a long way from where I started. When I was a girl, my mother and I fled our home. We escaped a country without freedom, ruled by a brutal dictator, where the cynical lie that government will provide led to oppression, war, mass murder. We ran far to the United States of America, A nation we knew had the courage to stand up to tyrants, to nurture human freedom and foster opportunity. I've gone from refugee to journalist, from war zones to the White House. I've gone from a frightened girl to a determined fighter against oppression, wherever I find it. And sometimes that's closer than we think. In our own Congress, agents of anger and discord are tearing at America from within.
It's time for us to impeach this president.
Like Ilhan Omar, we might seem nearly alike, both Muslims, both women, both refugees. But we couldn't be further apart. She spends her time in Congress sowing seeds of division, actively supporting our enemies. When President Trump ended the murderous reign of Qasem Soleimani, a vicious terrorist, killer of American soldiers and countless innocent civilians, Ilhan Omar was outraged, attacking the president, defending the terrorist, driving us further and further apart. She claims to speak for all Muslims, but she does not speak for me. As an American born in Iraq, it's personal to me. I was so proud my country, my president, removed such an evil from the world. When I became an American citizen, I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That's why I'm running for Congress. My name is Dalia Lakidi. I've seen up close the consequences of what Ilhan Omar is doing. Conflict, division, oppression. I escaped that world once, and I will not let it happen here. I'm running because we aren't as far apart as she wants us to believe. I'm running to bring us closer together.
Dalia Alakidi, go get her, girl. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. LA Times has an op-ed staff writer named Virginia Heffernan. And she had a piece this week that I've been meaning to get to that called Trumpism Was It What It Is? A Cult. So if it's not our children and our grandchildren who are going to be punished per Joe Scarborough for supporting Donald Trump, it's now that we're cult members, according to this op-ed writer, who I'm sure speaks for many in the left. I think you put together the swath between the space between Scarborough and the LA Times editorial page, or for that matter, the New York Times editorial page, which did a thing today, too, I'm going to get to. It's all in the same Venn diagram. They all agree with each other. They just don't know what to make of us. So we're cult members, or we're sinners whose children and grandchildren are going to have their iniquities stained on them forever, some kind of mark of Cain. Make the argument, folks. Tell us what we're wrong about. Are we really wrong to want to put more money in more Americans' pockets? Are we really wrong to get the IRS out of our health care decisions? Are we really wrong wanting to do what every sane country does, which is protect its borders? Are we really wrong for wanting to take terrorists off the face of the earth, like the previous two presidents? What are we so wrong about? Why is this a cult? Do you remember the fawning over Barack Obama by his supporters? And we're a cult? Do you remember Oprah Winfrey calling him the chosen one? But we're the cult? Do you remember how he was talking about healing the oceans? And we're the cult? This op-ed writer writes, Republican lawyer George Conway reportedly described his wife, Trump's presidential counselor, Kellyanne Conway, as a member of a cult. Do you realize what a problematic sentence that is? Republican lawyer George Conway. Okay, first of all, until Kellyanne Conway became the president's counselor, No one outside of Washington, D.C. circles knew who George Conway was. It's not like he's Ken Starr or some other famous Republican attorney, Andy McCarthy, or, I don't know, take your pick, Ted Olson. No one knew who George Conway was. He's famous because of his wife. Dennis Thatcher Club, they used to call it. The husbands who were less famous than their wives. Dennis Thatcher was Margaret Thatcher's husband. Isn't that funny? The Dennis Thatcher Club. So first of all, Republican lawyer George Conway. Oh, boy. Wow. Then she writes, Republican lawyer George Conway reportedly described his wife. Reportedly described his wife? Come on. Do your work. As a member of a cult. She couldn't call him and verify that he called her that. And so what? She goes on to say former GOP strategist John Weaver has used the term. John Weaver? John Weaver? No one outside of Republican campaign candidates and campaign consultants knows who John Weaver is. John Weaver has been so discredited, he wasn't even invited. A longtime McCain advisor, John McCain didn't invite him to his funeral. Remember how John McCain made a list of people who weren't supposed to come? John Weaver wasn't supposed to come. That's how credible John Weaver is. Anthony Scaramucci, Trump's on-time communication director, concurs. Yes, he was a one-time communications director. His tenure lasted 8 days. Also, news vet Dan Rather got fired from CBS for lying. Okay. Conservative political scientist Norman Ornstein. Norman Ornstein has never been a conservative political scientist. Norman Ornstein is not a conservative. I don't know that he ever has been one. Science journalist Steve Silberman. Don't know who that is. Pastor John Pavlitz. Don't know who that is. And academic and journalist Jared Yates Sexton. Don't know who they are. If you're summoning these people up as your proof, it's your list of witnesses as to who is and who isn't in a cult. Whew, that's a problem. That's a problem. No one knows who these people are. She goes on to write, what the cult diagnosis may lack in scholarly rigor, it makes up for in explanatory power. When polled, far too many Republicans come across as having abandoned their commitment to libertarianism, family values, or simple logic in the favor of Trump they worship. They're lost to paranoia and factually unmoored talking points, just the way so-and-so someone was lost to Sun Myung Moon. What abandonment to libertarianism, family values, or simple logic have we given up to worship Donald Trump? The only reason we like Donald Trump is because he's our best lever in getting us closer to our libertarianism, our values, our family values, and our simple logic. What have we given up? First of all, let's start with the libertarianism piece. The Republican Party is not the Libertarian Party. Never has been. That's why libertarians often run for president against Republicans, okay? We're not the Cato Institute. We're not Reason Magazine. We agree with them on some things. On some of the things we agree with, like more parental choice in education, Trump and Betsy DeVos couldn't be better. Couldn't be better. Family values? Everyone from the Family Research Council to the Heritage Foundation to the Federalist Society, they have thought Donald Trump's presidency has been better for family values than any other Republican presidency they can think of, including indeed, yes, indeed, probably including Ronald Reagan's. These people just don't know what we're about. They just have no idea. No clue. They just go on and on and on with no accountability and no credibility. That's what they do to lambast you, to have contempt for you. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. A friend of mine asked me if I would. I'm happy to do so. Say a word for the Arizona March for Life that'll be taking place this Saturday, January 18th at 10:30 at the Cesar Chavez Memorial Plaza. If you want more information on it, probably a series of websites you can go to. I would reference azliferally.org as one of them, azliferally.org. Where do I come down on this? I come down on this the same way Jesse Jackson came down on it in 1977. He wrote an essay on his position. He since changed it. I've held it. He says, an area that concerns me greatly, because I know it has been used with regard to race, is the psycholinguistics involved in this whole issue of life. If something can be dehumanized through the rhetoric used to describe it, then the major battle has been won. That's why the that is part of the dehumanizing process. The first step was to distort the image of us blacks, calling us the N-word in order to justify that which they wanted to do, not even feel like they had done anything wrong. Those advocates of taking life prior to birth do not call it killing or murder. They call it abortion. They further never talk about aborting a baby because that would imply something human. Rather, they talk about aborting a fetus. Fetus sounds less than human and therefore can be justified. He concluded his essay by saying, the essence of my argument is this. Suppose one is so hard-hearted and so indifferent to life till he assumes that there is nothing for which to be forgiven. What happens to the mind of a person, the Reverend asked, and the moral fabric of a nation that accepts the aborting of the life of a baby without a pang of conscience? What kind of person, what kind of a society will we have 20 years hence if life can be taken so casually? He wrote that in 1977. And he concluded, it is that question, the question of our attitude, our value system, and our mindset with regard to the nature and worth of life itself that is the central question concerning mankind. Failure to answer that question affirmatively may leave us with a hell right here on earth. Strong words. Reverend Jackson, 1977. He abandoned them. I still support them. Mary, don't go away. We'll be right back. 602-508-0960.